Okay. Well, I am here with Dr. Charles Starks in Ponca City, Oklahoma. I have the amazing honor and privilege to be in Ponca City to celebrate the 90th birthday of Dr. Charles Starks, the inventor of the extraction mechanism and the man who coined the term phase transfer catalysis. Thank you very much for hosting me in your home. I myself am 70 years old, and I fell in love with PTC 48 years ago, the moment I read your landmark publication 5 years after it was published in 1971. I want to thank you for your personal mentorship, and more importantly, I want to thank you on behalf of the scientific community for the immeasurable positive impact you made on achieving low-cost, high-performance green chemistry for thousands of commercial processes. So I'd like to ask a few questions for historical perspective. And again, it's hard for me to remember things that happened several years ago, but as best you can. One of the things which I'm curious about is, how did you come up with the extraction mechanism? Was it driven by your need to understand a specific reaction? Did it come to you in a dream? How did you figure it out? Do you remember?
We had, in my company, Conoco, we were basic suppliers for raw materials for surfactants. And this was in early 1960. My boss said to me that one of the basic raw materials for surfactants was fats and oils from plants, particularly coconut oil and palm kernel oil, and that these were vitally needed for food, because in the early 1960s, it was believed that the world was going to run out of food, and many academics at that time predicted that there were going to be great food shortages in the world, and that there would be no more oils for soaps, because they would be needed for food. And at the time, we were making a biodegradable detergent using straight chain alkanes, 12, 14 carbon alkanes from petroleum that were isolated, and they were all straight chain because they had to be biodegradable. And we were making those raw materials by chlorinating the straight chain the alkanes, and reacting with benzene, and then sulfonating that, and then with sodium to make sodium alkane sulfonates. And they were excellent detergents. But he said to me, these fatty acids are going to be in short supply. Can you think of some way that we can do a cyanide displacement on those chlorinated alkanes and make fatty acids and amines? And amines could be used as detergents too, from those nitrates, cyanide compounds. And you have to know that in order to not make polychlorinated alkanes, the alkane was only chlorinated to about 10%, so that there were very few dichloroalkanes produced. So how do you make a cyanide displacement with cyanide, which is totally water soluble, with a 10% of reactant in a highly nonpolar medium of 90% alkanes? And the only way that I could figure out to do that was to extract the cyanide into the alkane, and hopefully it would be reactive. I didn't think that based on the rates of sodium cyanide in lower alkanes, I didn't think the reaction would go very fast, and I didn't think it would work, and sodium wasn't going to extract it anyway, unless you used a lot of of a dipolar solvent, and I wanted to avoid the use of any kind of solvent because we already had 90% diluent there. And so I thought, well, maybe I could extract it with a tetraalkyl ammonium salt, a quaternium ammonium salt. I had thought about this idea when I was in graduate school, and not with cyanide, but with another reaction. And my major professor said it won't work because the quaternary salt will decompose and you won't get any place with it. And as it worked out, when I was thinking about this, another one of my bosses was doing work with some long chain quaternary ammonium salts. And so I borrowed some of that from him and tried it, and it worked. And at the high temperatures, the quaternary salt did decompose, but at a low rate, and at like 1/100th of the rate of the displacement reaction. So I thought that was acceptable. As it turned out, there was no great food shortage. There was no great increase in prices. So it was not a process that ever came to fruition, but it did. But you know, it suggests to me that there was a way to do some chemistry without involving a lot of solvents that are unnecessary or whatever. And my company was kind enough to let me work for a year and a half to do all of this work.
Oh, wow.
And it worked very well. And the patent, this was in early 1960, 1961, 1962. And the patent department in our company said, well, you can't say anything about it. You can't publish this work.
That's going to be one of my next questions, by the way.
until we get some clarification about patents. And that finally happened in 1969. And I had the paper ready to go, and so that was when it was published. That's when I sent it off to the Journal of American Chemical Society. And they wrote back and said, we have two reviews. One review says it's just another example of an emulsion catalyzed reaction, and there's lots of examples of that. As it turned out, I had lots of kinetic data and other things that showed that it was not that. And I wrote back and showed all of this evidence to the editor, and he right away published it. So that's how it came about.
And
I published it in two pieces. One, just the extent of reactions, the different kinds of reactions that it could do. And the second one was the kinetic basis and so forth that went into it.
Yeah, and those two articles, I remember them, I almost quote them. One was 1971, the other was 1973. I used to know by heart I think it was page 365, but I don't remember. Absolutely landmark articles in the history of organic chemistry, so that was really great.
Well, then I became, you know, I had seen an article in another magazine, another journal, by Makosa, and I didn't know that he had done any work in it. And it turned out that he had done work prior to 1960, I think it was in 1957 or 8. He published this work, and I became aware of it, but most of his work was published in journals that our library did not have, and I was not aware of, and I had not done a thorough search on. But it turns out that people had been using quaternary salts, not a lot of people, but some people, back in the 1920s, some early work had been done in Germany on using, I don't remember. And then there was an analytical chemist in Australia who used quaternary salts to do potassium permanganate titrations. Very nice work. And so my work was not totally original, but it was totally original to me and in my approach to it.
Yeah. If I can just interject my perspective, when I joined in 1976, the field of phase transcatalysis, there seemed to be two areas. One was the Mikosha stuff, which was always using what Charles Liotta calls the Polish national catalyst, which was benzyl triethyl ammonium chloride, which is a very small quat with 13 carbons, and that was for hydroxide reactions. And then the reactions that you were doing, and he had no kinetics or anything like that. It was very descriptive. You know, do this reaction, you get this product. Your work was incredibly analytical. I mean, the kinetics were there. There was no question what was going on. Extremely well supported from every single angle that's even conceivable. And your stuff was using the larger quads, like the aliquot 336, the methyl trioctyl ammonium, or methyl tricaprolyl ammonium chloride. And there seemed to be a very, very huge difference in the behaviors of your systems and Mikosha systems. So when I started my PhD thesis in my work in 1976, my goal was to try and figure out which is right, the Starks extraction mechanism or the Mikosha interfacial mechanism. I wanted to try and compatibilize them. And that's why I did my PhD thesis work in hydroxide-ion-initiated reactions under phase transcatalysis conditions, and I did a lot of kinetics modeled after yours, and that's when I found that hydroxide can be extracted into toluene, and it's very, very small amounts, but the effectivity, the basicity, sorry, was so high that I actually got pseudo-first-order kinetics with sodium hydroxide because there was no leaving group. And so then we adapted the extraction mechanism for pretty much everything. But I think the work that you did and the work that Mikosha did, yes, they both use quaternary ammonium salts to achieve impressive yields and impressive low, you know, short cycle times. But these are very different situations because, you know, you were transferring mostly nucleophiles, and the work of Landini and Montanari later on supported very much, extremely supported, you know, the extraction mechanism for those sorts of things. So it's like hydroxide was about 60% of commercial applications of PTC work, I won't say totally differently, but they work somewhat differently than the behavior, the effective solvent, the effective catalyst structure, the effective hydration, the effective agitation. For example, the hydroxide ion reactions in Mikosha, those are very, very agitation dependent, where you clearly showed without any question that the cyanide chloride exchange at like 250 RPM in a regular size flask, you get maximum reactivity and then it asymptotes. So the systems really are very, very different. And I think the landmark was the extraction mechanism that is now known as the Starks extraction mechanism. That was the huge, huge breakthrough. Mikosha's work is very good from a synthetic standpoint. But from the standpoint of understanding the basic fundamentals of how these systems work, that has humongous, immeasurable application and benefit to society, it was your extraction mechanism that really revolutionized this industry. And again, I'm in awe just sitting here with you talking with you about it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
About that. A few other questions. Next question here.
We know that Mikosha always said that he had taken his work from some other publication that earlier.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He never claimed to be original.
Okay.
Mr. Swift was a straight up guy.
Yes,
and he always was very.
If he was thinking it, he was saying it. No filter.
Yeah, he was a. He was an interesting person. He had been. He lived through the Nazi invasion of Poland. His mother was a teacher, fortunately, so she taught him. The Germans closed down the schools to all except the first four grades. And she kept teaching him until he had a high school degree. So after the war, he went on to college and could participate in it. He's a very nice guy. He was always good. I don't know if he's still alive, but I talked with one of his friends about 15 years ago, 10 years ago. I exchanged emails with one of his friends in Poland, and he said that he had cancer.
Oh.
And that he was teaching, but not reliably. Mm-hmm. He would come in once or twice a week to school, but I don't, maybe you know what happened to him.
No, I don't. The last I met him, as a matter of fact, I have, as you'll see when you open up the birthday card I got you, there is the signatures of all the people that, most of the famous people have faced transcatalysis when we met in Hawaii in 1995. So he's in the picture, and yeah, we have a signature as well. So I haven't seen him in, 30 years.
Well, I think that's probably the last time I saw him.
His synthetic work, extremely important. Your synthetic work was extremely important as well. And again, without trying to overly flatter, I'm just making objective observations. It was the kinetics and the just, you really can't prove anything in science. You can disprove things, but boy, as close as you can get to proving things, your work, the analytical,
thank you.
It is amazing. It's so consistent with the extraction mechanism.
Thank you. Mike, he did not have a physical organic background. He was an organic chemist. He had, I think, the equivalent of a master's degree. And he did not understand kinetics. He challenged me one time. He said, you call it catalysis. I call it phase transfer catalysis.
Yeah, you call it catalytic two-phase systems, if I remember correctly.
He said, there's no catalysis. You showed no catalysis. Well, it turns out that the quaternary salts are like 50 times faster reactions than if a corresponding sodium salt was used. So it brings it from the impractical into the practical.
Yes.
By having all of that structure around the positive nitrogen atom.
Exactly. And then when you showed first order kinetics with respect to catalyst, well, a direct one-to-one, a 1.00 first order kinetics, you can't really argue with that. So it was the kinetics that really was extremely crucial in the history of PTC.
And I had the advantage of having a good physical background, physical organic background.
My second question is one which you sort of answered, but maybe it's a little bit different, because I've encountered this before. Did your bosses want to keep the extraction mechanism of PTC a secret, like a trade secret, or did they readily agree to patent it? Because I know a lot of people, I know a guy at Dow by the name of Hank Hennis, who had something like that. I actually saw when I was at Dow an internal report. But Dow said, no, you can't. This is way too valuable to talk about this. So were your bosses, was this Conoco at the time?
Yeah.
Was his name McKay, or do I not remember correctly? McKay? Does that sound right? No, maybe not.
McCain was the president, I think.
Oh, okay.
Somebody, and Mr. Mack. I don't remember the rest of his name.
Do you remember if they said, Charles, this is way too valuable, don't even talk about it, or they said, hey, yeah, let's patent it?
They said patent it. And to tell you the truth, my boss understood what I was doing, but his boss did not. And his boss, 30 years later, we went on a cruise with him, the boss's boss's boss.
Yeah.
And some other people. And he said, he told me, he said, come and talk to me about phase transfer catalysis. Tell me what it's all about. This was years after. He never understood. They didn't know.
Wow.
They were oil chemists, and they knew basic chemistry. And in fact, well, it's off. I'll tell you something else later, but it's off the subject. But about that boss, his name was Slim Shera.
Okay.
And Slim and his subordinate, who was my boss's boss, were originators of these biodegradable detergents.
Huh.
And that was a huge change. I mean, a huge change in surfactants. An enormous, earth-shattering change. Because before that, they'd made detergents from kerosene and from these tetramers of polymers of butene. And they were not biodegradable. And you'd see these great chunks of foam going down the river.
Mm.
And throughout the world. And they were really ugly, and they were scary. And they changed that to these biodegradable. These two guys changed that here in Fox City.
Oh, wow.
To biodegradable. And when Slim died, I gave this eulogy for him. And I mentioned that he had improved the quality of life for the world.
Wow.
And that's why I started on the quality of life questions.
Wow. Oh, this is fascinating. This is riveting for me, and I'm sure for the people that will be listening to this. Wow. I remember the patent, I quote a lot, a patent that you had issued, that was issued to you in your name in 1976. It had like 52 examples, and it included all kinds of oxidations and borohydride and base catalyzed reactions, in addition to the usual cyanide, thiocyanate, iodide, you know, in addition to all the nucleophilic substitutions. You had oxidations, reductions. You covered just this incredibly broad range of organic chemistry. I always like to think about 25% of organic chemistry. Was there an issue, or since this, you published in 1971 in Journal of American Chemical Society, The Extraction Mechanism, and several years passed between that publication and the issuance of the wide scope patent in 1976. Did the patent office have any objections that you might recall? Or again, I'm asking you to go back 53 years here, so.
Well, they did. They quoted some particular ones. They had some objections, and the patent attorney I was working with said, "Well, we can get around all of that if we just specify that it has to be 16 carbons or more on the
patent." Okay.
So that's where that came from.
Oh. You've been working in this field for, you know, more than half a century. I've been working in this field for nearly half a century. And to hear these stories, I have to tell you, is just, it's very emotional for me, and it's absolutely fascinating. Okay, now I'm going to get to some more psychological things here. When you coined the term phase transcatalysis, how long did it take for you to realize that it would revolutionize cost reductions, environmental performance, process safety, and other extraordinary benefits to the chemical industry?
I could recognize that right away. You know, if you could eliminate solvents, and that was one of the big things that I wanted to do, was eliminate solvents. Or in the case of what I was after, was do a reaction in the presence of a highly negative solution. You could do things that hadn't been done before, at least industrially.
Yes.
And I, of course, was an industrial chemist, and which says, and academic chemists don't realize this,
yeah,
an industrial chemist has to not only obey the laws of thermodynamics, but they also have to obey the laws of economics.
Yes.
And that's what was really hard for me to, you know, it took me almost 2 years to understand that. to after living and working for 2 years, that should have been obvious.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was still academically oriented.
That is amazing. I've been, in the last few decades, involved in more than 100 commercial PTC processes, and my experience, I haven't counted, but I'm guessing roughly half the commercial applications of phase transcatalysis are solvent-free. In other words, when I say solvent-free, basically, if you have any sort of liquid reactants or product even, it's liquid at the reaction temperature, then you don't need to add extra solvent. And that's fantastic for things like throughput and other things, but it's also great for things like recovery. You don't have to have solvent recovery systems and all kinds of other systems. Major benefits from environmental standpoint, cost standpoint, and other things like that. So today, PTC is being used in an amazingly wide array of segments in the chemical industry, including polymers, monomers, pharmaceuticals, agrochemicals, petrochemicals, flavors, fragrances, dyes and pigments, solvents, explosives, medical devices, surfactants, and other commodities, specialty, and fine organic chemicals. Do you recall, and I personally worked in all of those, with phase transcatalysis, which it is amazing, including medical devices. Maybe after we finish this, I'll tell you about we did in 2003. It was pretty amazing. Do you recall which industries did PTC get adopted first, and which ones took longer for resistance to change to be overcome?
You know, I did not know a lot. I still don't know a lot about how PTC is used industrially. You know far more about it than I do.
Well, because I'm the only one crazy enough for a few decades to invest 100 hours a week on this, what I consider to be the most fascinating aspect of chemistry.
Somebody who was investigating, I think, from the Nobel Prize people called me one time and said, what industries and how is it used? And I only knew of one. That was GE, and they... And GE, and one of the chemists, and I don't remember his name, he told me what he was doing, and you know, Sareptus, don't tell anybody, but this is what we're doing. They were using it to make a monomer. And that was really the only... I had told him that I thought, this is how many pounds of chemicals were being... how many pounds of quaternary salts were being used in industry, and he's in all of industry, and I gave him some number, and he said, we use more than that every day.
Yeah. By the way, I'm guessing it was Dan Brunell.
It was.
I think it was in our PTC symposium in either 2000 in Hawaii or 1995 in Hawaii that Dan Brunell said that they use it in polycarbonate, and it's probably, at the time, it was probably the largest PTC application out there. I think it was 1 million tons per year of product, not of catalyst. So, and when we're finished here, I'll tell you a little about some of the work that I'm doing right now that's going to be using quite a lot of, we'll be using probably more than 1,000 tons of phase transfer catalyst per year in a single process.
Yeah.
But that's, the patents are coming out soon.
Anyway, that was... I never did, and I think because I was an industrial chemist, and I just didn't hear a lot, and I'm isolated here in Parker City, not in the middle of the industry, in the East Coast, and some of it in the Southern Coast, but it was here, and it was not the kind of chemistry that oil companies typically do.
Right. Yeah,
I was just extremely fortunate that my bosses were good enough to say, go ahead and do this work until you. And after a year and a half, they said, maybe you ought to think about making some money for us.
Oh, man, it's a shame that this patent could have been licensed and make a load of money as well. Okay, the next question, a quick one here, not quite a yes or no, but are you surprised that new, and you might not be following it these days, but so I've been writing the Face Transcatalysis Tip of the Month since 1994, and in October of 2002, I started putting it online. And I've now, actually at phasetransfercatalysis.com that I own, I have a critique of more than 450 PTC patents over the years. Yeah. And it used to be somewhat easy. You go to uspto.gov and you take a look, and there'll be, you know, 10 or 20 patents a month that have answer to the tetrabutyl ammonium. And now it's well over 100 per month. Oh. So I have to choose. And I choose three every month. I do a PTC tip of the month, a PTC catalyst of the month, and a PTC reaction of the month. And it's just overwhelming. And so it's now 53 years after you coined the term phase transcatalysis. Are you surprised that it continues to, that the applications of PTC continue to be developed? I mean, new applications.
I am surprised. I'm really surprised. I have not followed the literature since about 2000. I used to take all of the, and I read yours project once in a while, but I'm just sort of lost on it. Like I told you, I got deep into this business about quality of life and devoted all of my time and money to that. So I kind of drifted away from it. I didn't go to meetings anymore. I didn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, again, on behalf of the PTC community, I certainly want to thank you for inventing this and doing the things. I mean, you've been to many conferences, always the keynote speaker as far as I was concerned. So, again, the impact of your contribution is truly immeasurable.
Well, it was, there was a PTC meeting in one of the southern European parts of the Soviet Union. Mm. And Charlie Leota said to me, he said, "I see you're going to be a speaker at this place." Well, I had never even heard of this. Nobody had ever invited me. Nobody ever said anything to me. So I found out who was doing it, and I wrote him and said, "I understand that I'm supposed to be speaking at this." And he wrote back and he says, "You're welcome to come." That's it.
Yeah, I have not seen a lot of, since 2000, I really haven't been seeing a lot of PTC symposia that were directly, symposium that are directly.
Well, this was around 2000.
Around 2000, yeah.
1999.
Yeah. So, people think, oh, there's nothing new. There's a lot new. I mean, actually, today I was talking with one guy who was talking about, in petrochemical industry, there's nothing new, and I'm working on a petrochemical process right now that is revolutionary, and it uses phase transcatalysis. And it's interesting because one of the competitors invested several $100 million trying to achieve what three of us achieved in the laboratory. Oh. And so the patents, some patents have come out and other newer patents are coming out. So it just keeps on going. It keeps on going. But without the principles of the extraction mechanism that you envisioned and articulated in these articles and these presentations, I don't want to say nobody would have ever figured it out, but boy, you're the guy that figured it out. And being able to articulate a mechanism that is simple to understand has huge ramifications. The ramifications are not simple, but the actual extraction mechanism is people can understand it. I once made a joke at a symposium in 1987. I didn't know my audience. And I said, this is embarrassing because it's on tape. When I say tape, I mean cassette tape, because 1987, we didn't even have CDs yet. And I decided to start with a joke, and I said, "The principles of phase transcatalysis are so simple that even engineers and managers can understand them." Yeah. Crickets. I didn't know 80% of the audience was engineers and managers. So, but the principles are easy. Okay, getting back to some psychology, I'm going to guess you're not going to want to answer this. You're a humble man. I've known you now for a lot of years. How did the breakthrough discovery of PTC not go to your head?
Well, it was just not useful to my company.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you're a naturally humble man. And, you know, you and your wife, Virginia, have been role models for my wife and I for just, you know, how to manage life and how to manage just, you know, success and things. So, now I'm not a humble person, but you are. And I've always, you know, seen you as a role model. I mean, I don't worship anybody, but boy, my wife knows that you come as close as it comes for me to come close to worshiping somebody. So I really thank you for this. I have some questions more than about almost career things. What did you enjoy more, achieving breakthroughs or managing people who achieve breakthroughs or something else? Because you were also executive director of R&D vice president of R&D at Vista, yeah, when I broke away from Conoco. So what did you like more, doing the breakthroughs yourself or managing people that did the breakthroughs?
I hated management.
I'm sort of glad to hear that. The best scientists hate management because science requires out-of-the-box thinking and management requires compliant thinking.
Well, it's just, you know, what I hated was having to solve people's personal problems. That was not something I was prepared to do. And I had no training in doing it, and I didn't have the patience to do it.
Well, you have a PhD from MIT, is that right?
Yeah.
And they didn't teach you how to solve people's like marital problems so they can be productive at work?
No.
Okay.
Although I took a course in, what was the name of that? Not a course, I minored in personnel. Anyway, it was PT, personal.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. But it was not something that I really enjoyed doing.
Okay, well, so that's good to know. And along the same lines, what was the number one lesson you learned from your experiences, anything from process chemist to senior executive in the chemical industry? Is there any, and sort of I want to combine that with the next question is, what advice would you give chemists who are starting in their careers? So like, what's the biggest lesson you might have learned and what advice would you give people? It's a tough one. I know
it is complicated. It depends on one's goals. And in my case, you have to understand that when I was growing up, I was during the Depression, very, very poor. My goal was to make money, be a successful chemist, enough so that I could retire easily and comfortably. And that's happened. Virginia and I are amazed at, we had never dreamed that we would be as successful as we are.
Yes.
In that term of successful. But that's kind of a goal that once you reach there, so what?
Yep.
Money doesn't make you happy. It just makes life easier. And maybe it takes away some insecurity from, you know, not having to worry about money. And that's a big insecurity for a lot of people now, especially now. So that's one aspect of it. But another was that I had a high school chemistry teacher. And he had been in the Army, been wounded in the Second World War, and he was a very, very low-key guy. And he kind of inspired me in many ways. To be a searching the truth. And I, and my dad said to me once, said, and Virginia hated this, he said, a real man, when they leave this earth, they leave behind something other than kids. Virginia hated that. You can understand why. And my daughter heard that, and she hated it, and she hated me for it. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, when you grow up and you don't have anything, and you have, oh, now all your friends don't have anything, and then you run against people who do have things, and they treat you differently, or you at least you they think I think they treated me differently. That makes a difference in your life and how you look at things.
Very profound.
So that was. It's just very complicated. I never really wanted to be a manager, but that's where the money was, unfortunately. I could have said, no, I don't want to do this. I want to be a technical guy, and I could have done that. And with my degree, and MIT carries a lot of weight at my school, in this company, in this state. I could have done that. I could never have been a professor. I never did want to do that. And I didn't have the qualities to do it anyway, so it didn't matter. But it was...
I think you have all the qualities that you need to do whatever you want, but if you don't want to do it, to make you happy...
Well, some lady at Oklahoma State University said... how is it? She put, you talk like a United Nations translator. The monotone drone, and that's probably true. So that was that's something that's not going to change.
Yeah. Well. In science, what matters is the content, and I mean, I've always been riveted by everything you've ever said or written. And again, I'm not trying to hear it to worship you. I'm just saying this is my truly objective observation. I could be wrong, but
that scares me, Mark.
It's true. Everything I hang on every word of yours, including this session that we're having here. So I just want to end with a few things. As you know, Phase Transcatalysis has been my full-time entrepreneurial business since 1995, soon to be 30 years. When you and Charles Liotta accepted me as your junior collaborator in 1987, you totally changed my life for decades. There are no words to express, I mean, I have to now become, become emotional here, but there are no words to express the depth of gratitude I feel towards you and Charles Liotta for accepting me and mentoring me at the most crucial fork in my career path.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.